This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about communicating with animals. A lot of pet owners wish they could talk to their dogs and cats. A couple of years ago, Christina Hunger had an idea. She's a speech-language pathologist, and she works with a lot of children who are nonverbal and use devices to talk. This is known as augmentative and alternative communication, and it can include everything from iPads to speech-generating devices, like buttons you can press that say words for you. You can record all kinds of different words. Then Christina got a puppy, Stella, and she started using those recordable buttons to train the puppy with words like outside, play, or water. And she documented her efforts on social media. Here's some sound from the first video she put on Instagram, which shows a very insistent Stella stepping on her buttons. Then Stella scratches at the door.
Okay, I hear you. Let's go.
The videos quickly went viral, inspiring hundreds and thousands of other pet owners to buy their own buttons in hopes of teaching their pets to talk. The resulting videos are entertaining and, of course, cute, but they also raise questions. Are these dogs and cats actually communicating, or are they just pressing their owner's buttons? Liz Tung reports.
Of the millions of cats on YouTube, cats who step on their owner's sleeping faces, cats who knock over toddlers, cats who push their cat siblings down the steps, one of them stands out as especially sassy.
Hello, Billy.
Hi. This is Billy. She's a 14-year-old light gray tortie with wide green eyes and an adorable round face. And she's become famous not only for being one of the world's first talking cats, but for what she chose as her favorite word.
Mad, 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 mad.
That's from a compilation video made by Billy's owner, Kendra Baker, entitled A Year of Mad. Here's Kendra.
Billy is truly a sweetheart. Overall, like, she is very cuddly. She wants to be around humans. She is a cat, though, and we all know cats have a little bit of a personality.
Kendra and Billy have always been close, and Billy's always been a troublemaker. Take, for example, the story of how Kendra ended up adopting Billy when she was a kitten.
She was running across the street, caused a car accident. Thankfully, she was okay. But I jumped out and I grabbed her, and I tried so hard to find her home, and no one claimed her, so she became mine.
Kendra's a vet, and she's always been into enrichment. She taught Billy to do what are usually considered dog tricks, shaking paws, doing spins, but she never imagined that Billy would be capable of talking until she saw some of Christina Hunger's videos. So when COVID hit and Kendra found herself at home all day with Billy, she decided to give it a shot. For the first button, she chose what she thought would be the most motivating word for Billy.
So I started with food because Billy loves food more than anything in the entire world, more than me.
This, by the way, is not recommended, since some animals will just become fixated on the buttons as a food reward system instead of a way of communicating. It took about 3.5 weeks of modeling the food button before Billy pressed it for the first time. Once she realized pressing the button got her munchies, Billy was hooked. So did she gain weight?
Yes, she absolutely did. And then it was a very hard reality turn where, wait a second, Mom's not giving me food every time I press this button anymore. What?
After Billy got the hang of it, Kendra added a second button, pets, as in pet me. And then Kendra made an unusual choice for Billy's third button, the word that would become Billy's trademark, mad.
She picked up on that button faster than I think any of the other buttons that we've ever added. You know, I joke about this, but it was like she had always had this word in her mind, and I finally gave her an outlet for it, and she was like, let's go. And she really wanted to tell me when I was not up to par.
With the other buttons, Kendra would usually have to model them over and over in context for Billy to understand what they meant. With Mad, though, all it took was 3 examples.
I modeled it once when I told her that she couldn't have food, And then twice when I moved her off my lap, I modeled mad. And then the third time that I moved her off my lap, she marched straight over to that mad button and slammed it. And there was a cat glare that accompanied it. And I really felt the anger. So I feel like there's something there.
Here's a pretty typical example of Billy expressing her displeasure. The video starts with Billy next to her buttons, with Kendra and her boyfriend in the background.
Food. Billy, you can't have any more food, okay?
A minute goes by, and then Billy circles back.
Food. Food.
No. No, Billy.
She takes laps around the couch, swishing her tail. Then she turns around and faces them, and while making direct eye contact...
Mad.
Mad.
I know. Billy, what do you want besides food? Mad.
Today, Billy has more than 60 buttons, and she's actually started combining them into rudimentary sentences. Things like, want play, want food, even questions. Like this one video where Kendra keeps Billy waiting, and once she arrives, Billy asks, before, where? What I was most interested in were the abstract words, like soon or later, happy, and I love you. Obviously, there's nothing cuter than a cat or dog saying they love you. But I also couldn't help but wonder. So I assume whenever she or you presses the I love you button, you give her some pets or scritches. So how do you know she actually understands what it means versus just using it as another pet me button?
Yeah, I don't know. That one's really difficult because it is, again, like a really nebulous concept.
Having said that, Kendra added the I love you button a lot later than the pets button. And she says Billy doesn't use them interchangeably. Pets is much more popular.
But it is an abstract concept. So how much does she understand? Who knows? Like, does she just think that when she presses this button, I immediately give her affection? Potentially.
This is kind of the big question when it comes to the whole button communication craze. How do we actually know that Billy or Stella or any of the other cats and dogs we see on Instagram actually really understand the words they're using versus just pressing buttons as a way of getting some kind of response, whether it's food or attention or pets or just for the pleasure of producing a sound they might like? As it happens, Billy is part of a research project that's trying to answer exactly that question.
The big question is, are non-human animals using these sound buttons in what I consider kind of interesting ways?
This is Leo Trottier, the guy who's spearheading the research project, which he's named They Can Talk. And by interesting ways, he means using the buttons in ways that go beyond the equivalent of lab mice pressing a button to get food. And he says they've actually started to see some of that interesting usage.
We have seen things that I would have never expected to have seen.
Leo studied cognitive science, but he actually got involved with a project as an entrepreneur. Years ago, while getting his PhD, he got interested in this idea that a lot of the cognitive abilities humans have, animals have too. He ended up starting a company based on that idea, designing video games for cats and dogs to keep them stimulated while their owners were at work. The project fizzled out. But when Christina Hunger's videos started coming out, Leo's interest in working with animals and exploring their cognitive abilities was renewed. Leo realized he could bring a scientific approach to what Christina Hunger was doing. So he started FluentPet, a company that designs recordable buttons specifically for cats and dogs to communicate with. Pretty quickly, he found that he had plenty of potential beta testers. Within a year of Christina Hunger's first video, Facebook groups with hundreds and then thousands of people had formed, all dedicated to training their dogs to communicate using buttons.
I reached out to a number of them and I said, hey, I have some experience making devices for dogs and cats, and I have a background in cognitive science. Would you like to improve on these DIY boards that you're putting together with Velcro and plywood?
So Leo started designing and testing prototypes. He made a few improvements, making the buttons smaller so they were easier for small dogs or the odd cat to press, organizing the buttons in hexagonal regions instead of long lines to make it easier for animals to remember where each button lived, grouping the buttons by word type, subjects, objects, actions, and social words. It was all going well. And then came the doggy star who blew things up for Leo, Bunny. a sheepadoodle who just so happened to have the gift of gab.
Love you. Love you too.
Bunny just had that special something. She got written up in the New York Times, Salon, BuzzFeed, the BBC, and within weeks had racked up millions of followers on TikTok. So Leo reached out, and Bunny's owner, Alexis Devine, agreed to help advertise Fluent Pets buttons. But Leo, who dropped out of his PhD program but is still a scientist at heart, wasn't satisfied with just selling buttons. Thanks in part to Bunny, Fluent Pet had built up an online community of thousands of people, all sharing tips and tricks on the website's forum of how to train their pets to talk. That's when Leo realized that he had the makings of a ready-made research project on his hands.
Having all of these people who are very enthusiastic about this question and willing to participate, it felt like it would be some kind of misconduct on my part to not see if it was possible to kind of bring all these people together to figure out what was going on.
Leo needed a scientist, unconnected to Fluent Pet, to help design and run the research project. So he reached out to Federico Rossano, a professor of cognitive science at the University of California, San Diego, to see if he was interested.
And he asked me, what do you think of dogs being trained to use buttons? And my immediate response was skepticism, because I was familiar with the history of the animal language studies.
One reason Federico was skeptical was because of what's called the Clever Hans effect.
Clever Hans was this horse that was supposedly capable of doing mathematical operations like additions and subtractions.
The handler would ask Hans, what's 2 + 3? And Hans would give the answer by stomping his hoof 5 times.
And for a long time, people thought this animal was a genius and had become a star.
Until a psychologist came along and showed that Hans wasn't actually doing math. He was reacting to physical cues by his handler and the audience, which would relax and smile every time he got close to the right answer. Ever since then, Clever Hans has become shorthand for researchers unintentionally cueing desired behaviors in animal subjects. But even more daunting than Clever Hans was scientists' troubled history with animal language research.
There's a long history of this. They started in the 1930s at least. And the idea was to see whether other animals could learn language.
They started off by trying to actually teach bonobos and orangutans to talk, like with their mouths. When that didn't work, they turned to sign language. And they found some success. Specifically, it was superstar primates like Coco the gorilla, who eventually built up a vocabulary of more than 1,000 signs.
Love you,
love. Oh, is that
she said.
Oh.
Love you, visit, love.
Oh.
Well, that was very nice.
Thank you, Coco.
She loves her visitor.
At first, the project was thought of as a success. But then, in the late 70s, the tide turned. Critics started questioning the results and suggesting that what we had thought was real language was in fact just wishful thinking.
They were not doing anything creative or original. They were not really combining signs into meaningful sentences.
It wasn't language, they said. It was nothing more than a trick taught through endless repetition. Worse, a lot of the animals ended up disoriented and suffering once they were put back with other members of their species.
Many of these animals were highly traumatized and they show problematic behaviors, and many of them did not live a very happy life.
And so this dream of teaching animals to talk died on the vine. From there, the field branched out in different directions. Some researchers decided to look at how animals communicated with other members of their own species. Others stayed focused on human communication, but looked only at comprehension, which is how we discovered that some dogs are capable of learning upwards of 1,000 words. A few others did work using symbols to communicate.
But again, the limitation was that usually this would be one animal, maybe two animals, that spend their entire life being trained for hours and hours and hours. And some of the findings were mostly anecdotal.
So this was the backdrop swirling around in Federico's head when he first got Leo's email. His knee-jerk reaction was no. Science has already been over this. It's all just wishful thinking. There's nothing more to investigate. But then Federico started watching some of the videos Leo had sent, specifically of Bunny, the chatty sheepadoodle. And he couldn't deny that what Bunny and Christina Hunger's dog Stella were doing amounted to more than just a party trick.
I was fascinated because now I thought now there's two dogs at least that seem to be doing remarkable things.
Of course, as a scientist, Federico was aware that these videos could be cherry-picked. Alone, they didn't prove anything. What they did show was that it was possible for ordinary people to teach their dogs how to use these buttons in a fairly short period of time, and that regular dogs could build up vocabularies of dozens of words.
What I was impressed by was the idea that they were not just using one or two buttons. They had several, right? They had maybe like 20 buttons or something. And so the idea was, hey, what can happen if instead of getting just two dogs, you get 200 dogs, 2,000 dogs, 20,000 dogs to have 40, 50 buttons.
Federico knew from research about human language acquisition that this threshold, 50 words, was significant. It's when young children start producing simple 2-to-3-word sentences.
And so the question was, is it possible that once they get to have a minimum number of buttons to use, are they going to start combining them into sentences just like young children do by the time they are two? And, of course, the dream was, hey, are they going to start combining more than two buttons? Maybe we're going to make three buttons combination or four buttons combination.
This was the big question that Leo's study just might be able to answer. Are dogs and cats capable of not just memorizing words, not just using the buttons like a lever to get food or a pat on the head, but are they capable of actually combining words to create sentences, to ask questions or communicate thoughts, to use language in a way that we've traditionally thought of as uniquely human? These are questions that up until now, scientists seemed unlikely to answer. Sure, we've seen a few superstar talking animals like Coco or Alex the African gray parrot, but getting to that point required thousands of hours of intensive one-on-one work, a process that seemed neither ethical nor scalable. But now, thanks to videos of dogs like Bunny, it was clear to Federico that that work didn't need to be done in a lab by specially trained researchers. It could be done in people's homes. And it just so happened, thanks to COVID, there were thousands of people ready and able to do that work. Federico says that's what convinced him to take part in the study, the potential it held as a citizen science project. And he says the goal of the project goes beyond figuring out if animals can use language.
Obviously, they can learn it. They can learn to associate buttons to meaning. That's no news. What I think of this study is it's a production study. It's the idea that you can now see what would they talk about if they were provided a vocabulary.
The first two phases of the study focus on how animals learn and use the buttons. Phase three will use behavioral experiments to test whether or not they actually understand the meaning of these words. They haven't yet released any findings. Federico says their first paper should be coming out soon. So instead, I asked Federico what he's seen, anecdotally, that stood out to him. He said one thing he's been impressed by is seeing animals communicating on behalf of other pets in the house.
Let's say there's another dog in the house or another cat and is stuck behind the door or doesn't have water or doesn't have food. You would find the one that can use the soundboard would go and press certain buttons to tell the human, help them.
Another interesting behavior they've seen is animals asking for people or other pets who aren't around, either because they've left the house or, in sadder cases, passed away.
It shows you that they have the ability to communicate about something that is not physically present, somebody that is not physically present, and they think about it.
A third thing Federico's found fascinating is animals communicating about their own pain, fear, or discomfort. A particularly incredible one is this video of Bunny, the sheepadoodle. She starts off pressing the button for mad. And when her owner, Alexis Devine, asks why she's mad, Bunny presses the button for ouch.
Where ouch?
Stranger. Where stranger? In your paw?
And then Bunny walks over and offers her paw to Alexis, who a minute later discovers a foxtail, a kind of spiky grass lodged between Bunny's toes.
This is the stranger in her paw. She's got a mat between her ow toes.
And the fourth most interesting behavior Federico's observed, and for my money, the most fun, is what he calls productivity, combining words to create new meanings. Take, for example, this dog, which was captivated by an ambulance driving by.
So you see them looking outside the window and coming back and looking outside the window and coming back and then just pushing the button, squeaky car. And then they look at the human kind of like, what is going on?
Federico and Leo also told me about a few others. One dog, they say, started referring to ice cream trucks as refrigerator cars. Another, who happens to be a fan of chewing on ice, started asking for it by pressing the buttons water and bone. And Bunny, according to owner Alexis, once referred to a plane as a big upstairs bird. As for Billy the cat, Kendra says she calls her morning coffee catnip water. So that's all pretty interesting. But what about the goal Federico mentioned? Finding out if once animals had vocabularies of 50 words and up, if they were able to start forming basic sentences. He says that's something they've already started seeing from their more advanced learners, like Bunny.
One of my favorite was Bunny saying, cat, dog, want. And then repeating it, cat, I want. And so you're like, okay, so now you have an object, the cat, that is up high. And then you're using a noun, a subject, dog, yourself, want, the verb. So you now have what sounds like a sentence. Is it a complete fluke, or is it actually something that you can do reliably?
Kendra says Billy the cat is somewhat less talkative. She tends to deploy sentences at strategic times, like when she's trying to prevent Kendra from leaving for work.
She had done a couple of them. We had cuddled, we had played fan toy, and then I really had to go. I was going to be late. And she asked me, work where? Then I had to explain to her what I do for a living using her buttons. And then she pressed mad. I either didn't do a very good job or she was not a fan of my answer.
Of course, Billy and the other animals do make mistakes. There's plenty of videos of them stringing together what seem to be random words that puzzle their owners. But Kendra says at this point, she's fairly confident that Billy's use of the buttons isn't just a fluke or some Pavlovian behavior designed to get what she wants.
You're never going to be able to say definitively 100%. Does she probably know what some of the concrete words are? Yeah, I think we can say that with a fair amount of certainty at this point. Some of the more nebulous words, all I can really say is that she uses them in contacts, I would say over 80% of the time.
So is that remaining 20% because Billy doesn't understand? Is it the kind of normal mistakes anyone would make when they're learning a foreign language? Or is it, as Kendra suggests, because cats are cats?
Sometimes she'll press catnip and I'll give her some catnip and she doesn't want it. So is that because she's being a cat? You know, how many people have opened a door for a cat that was meowing and then they turned around and they walked away from you? Does that mean that they didn't want the door opened, or were they just, you know, being a cat at that point? It's hard to say definitively, which is why I find kind of the study of language in general so fascinating.
That story was reported by Liz Tung.